Hey everyone, welcome to our preview show for the Sweet 16 of the Dan and Joe Sports Show. As always, I'm Dan.
And I'm Joe.
All right, Joe, before we start talking about the next round of matchups that we have, the really exciting games this weekend, the Sweet 16, I wanted to talk about two overlooked leagues that have really just been impressive so far in the NCAA tournament. First of the Big East. You and I talked about this last week that we thought the Big East getting only three teams in was a complete and utter travesty based on what we saw last year with UConn, destroying everybody en route to winning their fifth national championship in 25 years, and Creighton being just that close from making a Final Four and joining UConn there. And, we're looking at it now. The Big East got three teams in. They got UConn as the number one overall seed, Marquette's a three seed, and then Creighton's a three seed. And all three of them have won both their games, and they're all sitting there in the Sweet 16. And
Yeah, absolutely. And, case in point to add to that, you've got three national championships the Big East has won since 2016. And the Big Ten has not won a national title, for instance, since 2000. And so, I don't understand at all why anybody would discredit this conference.
I don't either. I mean, and you look at the, these are legendary basketball programs that are in that conference. UConn, Villanova, Seton Hall, St. John's, Georgetown. I mean, there's big heavyweight, programs there. Creighton has been really good the last 10 years. And you look at these teams that got left out. St. John's got left out with Rick Pitino, in his reclamation project, winning 20 plus games in his first season there. Shaheen Holloway, the coach of the Peacock himself, who took St. Peter's all the way to the Elite Eight, is now in his second year at his alma mater, Seton Hall. He had them with 20 plus wins. Providence had 20 plus wins. I mean, Providence is a program who's been to a couple Final Fours in the past. Billy Donovan played on the Final Four team of Providence's. And
Yeah.
actually coached by Rick Pitino, interestingly enough. And to me, those three teams all should have been in the tournament.
Yeah. Every team in this conference, like I'm looking at their conference standings right now, has like a level of tradition. I mean, Butler, was in two national championship games.
Back to
I
back.
mean, even DePaul back in the day has been to Final Fours. I mean, they had a legendary coach that was there for like 40 years. And DePaul this year, as bad as they were, they actually played South Carolina within 5 points earlier in the year. Maybe that was a precursor for South Carolina being somewhat overrated heading into the tournament. So what I would say ultimately is just you have a conference that prides itself in basketball, and here, you only put three of their teams in the tournament.
And meanwhile, you put teams like Virginia and Colorado State in over them, who just got blasted in the first four games. I would have loved to have seen Seton Hall or St. John's get a chance in a game like that. I can go ahead and tell you that Rick Pitino is not going to score 48 points and lose by 40 in an opening game.
No, yeah, not only would they, win or lose, they were going to play a better performance.
Definitely. The other one, Joe, is the ACC. That's another classic basketball conference who the last 3 or 4 years, they've gotten less and less teams into the NCAA tournament. You feel like maybe all of the stuff that's been going on with Florida State and Clemson suing the ACC to get out and all the unrest that they've had on the football side of things has kind of warped the perception of their basketball league. Because we're sitting here right now, they got four teams into the NCAA tournament. Or actually, I guess technically they have five in because Virginia lost. But I don't really consider that as losing when you're in the first four. But North Carolina, one seed, doing what they're supposed to do as a one seed. Duke looking very dominant as a four seed. Clemson, I mean, great job so far making the Sweet 16. And then the surprising one is NC State, the team that made it all the way through the ACC tournament. Got the AQ bid by getting that win as an 11 seed. And if you're a Virginia, I mean, if you're an NC State fan, you're thinking back to Jimmy V and Jim Valvano with his underdog NC State team who did the same thing, won the ACC tournament, and then, of course, went all the way through and played Mighty Georgetown and Patrick Ewing and had the biggest upset in the history of college basketball. these teams are all in the Sweet 16. And so I think the ACC is really doing a great job right now. And they've kind of had a similar thing where a couple years ago, they got, I think, three teams in. And meanwhile, Duke and North Carolina made the Final Four. And then last year, they barely got any teams in, and Miami made the Final Four. And so the ACC, I think, is still a great basketball league. And they're showing it with, getting four out of five teams in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I think that the ACC was perceived to be, a top-heavy conference. But I think oftentimes you see when a conference is top-heavy, that doesn't necessarily mean, to me at least, that the rest of the conference is bad. I sometimes feel like when you have years like the SEC did, where there's a lot of teams kind of, fighting for position, it can sometimes be more of a product that just really there's no separation, there's more mediocrity. Whereas I would almost rather a conference have that degree of separation. And I think that another thing that's just kind of hurt the ACC is you've had teams like Louisville that have been catastrophically bad. You had Miami after making it to the Final Four last year. They were like next to last in the conference. Florida State was down. I think it was just a product of some of those teams being down that maybe kind of made us overlook the ACC.
I think that's definitely part of it, Joe. And then I also think too that people are still just sad to not see Coach K and Roy Williams at UNC and Duke. I feel like that also factors in a little bit of the view of the conference. And then Leonard Hamilton not being at Florida State anymore. These are things that I think is making it to where, people just don't view the conference the same way without having those legendary coaches there.
And I'll tell you, I think Pittsburgh, I know, Jeff Capel's done pretty good, but I think Jamie Dixon should have stayed at Pittsburgh. I think that was a much better marriage than him being at TCU.
Oh, I think so too. I think it's a better job than TCU is in basketball. Pittsburgh people love basketball. They've been very good for, that's a program that was always one that made the NCAA tournament over and over again back when they were in the Big East. Hey, talking about how much Pittsburgh likes basketball, look at how people got so excited about Duquesne making the NCAA tournament for the first time in 50 years and winning a game. That's the Catholic school of Pittsburgh. So I feel like Pittsburgh is just a place that, is more big into basketball than what you're ever going to get at TCU.
Yeah, I think the only reason he took the TCU job, I think he went to college there. But even then, like I really never understood the decision. But the other thing about coaches, you no longer have Jim Boeheim at Syracuse. Like that, that's another one that adds to it.
Yeah, I mean, the longest serving coach, I think, maybe in the history of college basketball. I mean, Boeheim was there for over 50 years, I think.
Yeah, it's unreal.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that all affects the perception of the conference. And you're right, Syracuse not being in the tournament, that's another one that I think, drops it down a little bit. But I think that's a story that next year, I think the ACC, if it doesn't implode based on these lawsuits that are going on with Florida State and Clemson, I think the ACC probably has a chance of getting more bids next year based on what they do, what they've done so far. And certainly the Big East should get six or seven teams in next year.
Oh, absolutely.
Joe Starkin with the Big East, UConn is being incredibly dominant yet again. I think there was in the second round game, there was a point where they were up 50-10 in the first half. I mean, just unreal. And they get to take on San Diego State, who, of course, made it the championship game last year and lost to UConn. And made Auburn that much more embarrassed about losing to Yale based on the fact that San Diego State just put a complete and utter curb stomping onto Yale and showed that, they're kind of the forgotten about team that made the championship last year, but the Aztecs are still for real.
They really are. It's a situation where, yeah, they got, an easier draw there in that second round game, but they still, came out focused and prepared. They're a little bit different this year. A few players depart, but I think one thing that's been key for them is they're dangerous with Jadon Ladie. He's really emerged. He was a guy that was like a role player for them last year. Now he's out there scoring like 20 something points a game. And then you still got Lamont Butler and Darion Trammell. Those guys, stayovers from last year. So they're still kind of that gritty defensive team, but Ladie's offensive prowess gives them a degree of scoring that they didn't have as much last year. That's why you saw them really struggle against UConn to score down the stretch in that game. So I think this is an intriguing matchup for them. But at the end of the day, I mean, UConn playing, I think, in Boston with a very partisan crowd, and as hot as UConn is with such a balanced team where basically five or six guys can beat you any given night, I just don't see UConn losing.
No, I mean we talked about Auburn traveling to Spokane, Washington to have to play San Diego State having to travel to Boston, take on UConn in their backyard. I mean Boston's probably 3 hours from Storrs, Connecticut, and that whole New England area is kind of like one state in and of itself. That's going to be a rough environment for them, and this UConn team is just killer. I mean, they got four or five guys that are probably going to get drafted in the first round of the NBA draft. Dan Hurley right now is the hottest coach in America, and UConn is the best program in America in college basketball and have been for the last 25 years. And as good as San Diego State is, as well as they play defense, even with having Ladie now, who is helping them in their scoring, and the holdovers from last year and Butler and Tramell, I still like UConn in this game, and I still like him for about probably more than 10 points.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just an embarrassment of riches. You've got that mix of senior talent like Tristan Newton, and then also young talent. And then finally, that front court. I know they had Sanogo last year. He departed, but they're maybe even better this year at that position. I mean, Alex Caravan and Donovan Clingan. I mean, that is a scary front court.
Yeah, Klingon is excellent. Yeah, that's definitely one of those games that is going to be exciting based on what happened the year before with them playing each other. But I think in reality, it's not going to be much of a rematch. And I think the team that
Yeah.
won it last year got it again. Joe, I think
Yes.
a really exciting game if you like points. So UConn of course scores, but San Diego State's on defense. But if you want to see no defense at all, and just maybe a game that's like 110 to 105 or something, I think North Carolina and Bama is going to be just an awesome basketball game to watch. I mean, it's going to be Sears and RJ Davis and Baycott just lighting up the scoreboard, and defense is going to be completely optional on this one.
Yeah, it will be. Now, I do think that Baycott's presence, I was talking about Clingan with UConn. I think that Baycott's presence kind of makes a difference in this game. There's something about him being able to control the boards to kind of create some issues when you're trying to get in the lane if you're Alabama. I think that makes a big difference because I feel like with Sears and Davis, it's kind of a wash. You've got two really good guards that are seniors, but honestly, I think Davis is probably a little bit better. And so I give the edge to North Carolina. Like I said, I feel like Bama got a little bit of an easier draw. Yes, this is a free shot here for Alabama, but I think clearly North Carolina to me is the better team and the more experienced team with this roster in the tournament.
Yeah, Joe, I would have liked to have seen this game last year. If you could have had North Carolina at the same level where they were a one, gotten to take on Bama when they had, Brandon Miller, the Canadian player they had that was so good that was also a first round draft pick. I would have liked to have seen that this year, last year, and then see that them take on each other this year. I think Bama's problem, and we've seen it when they play the physical teams in the SEC that are really good on the inside, they can't play teams that have really good postmen. I mean, Auburn just obliterated them when they played them in Neville Arena. Tennessee beat up on them. Kentucky beat up on Alabama. And even more importantly, Florida, which is a team that's not as talented as those ones I mentioned, but have great post players, they beat Bama by 20 plus points twice. And I think Baycott's a real matchup problem for Bama. I mean, RJ Davis is a great player, but you're right. I mean, him and Sears, they're both going to get theirs. But the one thing that Bama doesn't have is they don't have a post player that can match up with Baycott.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. I mean, the four best post players left are Clingan, Baycott, Ike for Gonzaga, and Edie for Purdue. Like, to me, those are the four difference makers. And North Carolina has one of them. And I think that's the difference in the game. And I think that Alabama has kind of maxed out making it to the Sweet 16 with this team.
I mean, I think they've exceeded what we should have seen. I mean, they shouldn't have been a four seed to begin with based on what the resume was, but they were given it, and hey, they've done what a four seed's supposed to do, which is make the Sweet 16. And I think this is the end of the road for them because they're taking on a team that's played in a national championship 2 years ago, returns the main pieces from that team just a lot of experience there. And the main thing being that Bama's playing a little bit better defense than they were before, but they just don't have a post player that can match up with Baycott. And every time we've seen them take on an SEC team that has post players who aren't even in the same realm as Baycott, but that are good, they get beat.
Yes, I think so.
Joe, I think maybe the most fascinating game of the Sweet 16, because we're mentioning SEC teams, I think Tennessee and Creighton is one that, I mean, I haven't even made up my mind yet, but who's going to win it? I mean, it's going to be excellent. You know, Creighton's got their trio of really excellent scorers. You got Kalk Brenner, who in my mind is, you know, he's like the new age big that you see that the NBA wants, where he's a guy that can be good on the inside, but he also can shoot it from anywhere. And then you get to see them take on the senior leadership that you have in Tennessee with Zakai Ziegler and, of course, Dalton Knecht, the SEC Player of the Year.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to see Ziegler get some more points in this game. He's going to have to carry the load some if Tennessee's going to win this game, because I feel like the key advantage for Creighton is that they've got that three-headed monster. You know, it doesn't have to be one guy going for 25. Like, either any of those guys can get, you know, 15 points, 20 points. Like, he doesn't have that pressure on one person. Whereas I think, yeah, Connect, he's got to go out there and feel like he has to score 30. And so I think the only way to kind of, level that out is for Ziegler and some of these other guys to go out there and play a little bit above their heads, score like, you know, maybe 15, 20 points instead of just like 10 a game. Otherwise, I feel like Creighton's probably going to advance.
Joe, I'm probably going to surprise you on this one because I like Creighton as much as I do. And I think this is actually like, you know, I think I picked Creighton to, no, actually, I think I picked Tennessee to, no, I did. I took Creighton to make it the Final Four. But I'm taking Tennessee in this game based on the fact that Dalton Knecht did not have his best game against Texas. I feel like Knecht's one of those people that if he has an off game, he kills it the next game. And against Texas, he only put up like 13 points. Most of which were on free throws. Now, they were at the end of the game, but I think he's kind of due for one of those 30 or 40 point outbursts. And I think he's going to play hero ball on this one. And I think Zakai Ziegler is also going to have a good game. But the reason I'm picking Tennessee, I actually think Creighton may be a better basketball team, is the fact that I think that Connect is going to go off based on the fact he didn't have that great a game last week.
So, Connect reminds me a little bit of like some of the play we saw of Buddy Hield the year they made it to the Final Four. So, I see like some parallels, you know, where he can take over a game and maybe lead this team to the Final Four. So, it would not surprise me if Tennessee won this. I think the winner of this game is going to the Final Four.
Oh, yeah,
But
definitely.
I just feel like Creighton just more balanced. And I just kind of feel like this is Greg McDermott's year after making it so close, you know, last year. Narrowly lost to San Diego State.
Yeah, Joe, I mean, this is like the coin flip game to me. Like I said, I think this is the most even matchup that you're seeing in the Final Four. And this Creighton team is every bit worthy of making the Final Four, and that's the one step they are away. So definitely not going to be surprised if we see the three-headed monster of Creighton get it done and then make the Final Four this year.
Yeah, because I mean the winner will play what Well, of course, the winner will play. Is it Gonzaga Purdue? I mean, that will be a great game. I mean, honestly, those two games, like if I had to watch just two, like those may be the two. Like those are some great games.
I think you know, if I had to watch three, UNC Bama, Gonzaga Purdue, and Creighton Tennessee, those are the best three games.
Yeah, Gonzaga Purdue is going to be great. And we talked about it a lot in the last game. You know, I think that the guard play for Gonzaga is a big advantage. You know, but also want to see how the bigs for Gonzaga handle Edie. You know, how does EK, how does Ben Gregg, how do those guys handle Edie? I'll say this: the one thing that Gonzaga's got to continue is their hot 3-point shooting. I mean, that was something they really did well against McNeese State and against Kansas. And so I am kind of curious, let's say they go out there and sputter a little bit offensively. Can they kind of stay in the game? Can they hang around? Or, you know, does Edie kind of take over? I mean, that is a storyline for me.
Yeah, what's going to be interesting is, you know, Purdue hasn't played a team that has a big that's as good as EK. So how does Edie respond to that? Does it make him elevate his game to where he plays even that much better? Or does it affect the way that he's playing and then take away from it a little bit? I think the psyche of Purdue makes every bit of difference in this game. You look at what they've done the first 2 weeks so far, they have been dominant in their first two games. And, that makes me like a little bit less, ecstatic about my upset pick with Gonzaga because I think Purdue is playing such great basketball right now. But they're taking on a team that's playing by far their best basketball of the season. And I think, we've seen it. The guard play is what gets national championships. And the year that Gonzaga lost in the national championship game to Baylor, it's because Baylor had better guards than Gonzaga did. And, this Auburn team that was so great this season, the one thing it didn't have is it didn't have a stellar guard. They didn't have any, their point guards were also ran players on their teams. And everything began and ended with the big men, J'Nai Brim and Jalen Williams. And so the one thing that makes me worried about Purdue is that they don't have an excellent guard and that everything has to go to Edie. And I just think the guard play at Gonzaga with Nembhard is what's going to get it done for him.
I mean, that's their recipe to win. Now, I looked it up. These two teams, they played back, I think, in the Maui Invitational back in December. It was a totally different territory. Purdue won that game by 10. I talked about how Gonzaga's not as deep as they were then because they've kind of gone to a lesser rotation. The fewer players play regular minutes. But I think the key is in that game, Gonzaga was 6 for 32 from 3-point range. And so I think that's what would concern me for Gonzaga is do they get into that type of game where they just can't bury a basket and kind of fall into that trap? And if that happens, I could definitely see Edie, asserting his dominance. And so I think because I'm kind of afraid that's going to happen, I would love to see Gonzaga win this. I hope that it comes down to guard play, but I'm going to say that Edie leads Purdue to a victory and a very narrow win.
Well, Joe, something I was just thinking about is with Gonzaga's, lack of depth and the fact that they're winning these games with six players, I feel like this game would have been better for Purdue if they could have taken on Gonzaga in the second round or in the Elite Eight, because I feel like after you've had a week's worth of rest, the lack of depth isn't as big of an issue. So I think that's another thing that goes in Gonzaga's favor on this one.
They are lucky that they got the extra day. They got five. I think Purdue only gets four because they played Sunday. So I mean that definitely I'm hoping that works in their favor, but I'm interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah, definitely. Joe, an interesting game too. We've been talking about Clemson with Hall, and they're this team that's just so senior laden, kind of coming out of nowhere. They were good in the ACC, but no one really thought much of the ACC. And Clemson went out and just destroyed a Baylor team that's won a national championship in the last couple of years, has one of the best coaches in Scott Drew, and played in what was perceived to be the best conference in America in the Big 12. Which I think that's another conference that's been proved to be a little bit overrated this year based on what you're seeing in the Big 12 with only what Iowa State and Houston left. But this Clemson team coached by Brad Brunell, who I think is a very underrated coach, is looking really solid going into their Sweet 16 matchup against Arizona. What do you think about this one?
I think it's a fascinating game. I think that Clemson's one of those great teams that we just didn't appreciate this year. I mean, PJ Hall is a great player. Chase Hunter. I mean, this is just a slew of very experienced players for Clemson. So I could easily see them winning this game. But at the end of the day, I'm going Arizona. I had them in the Final Four. I can't, turn away from them now. I just feel like we're destined to have that Caleb Love UNC reunion in the Elite Eight. And also think that Omar Bala, the Gonzaga transfer, he came to Arizona with Tommy Lloyd when he took the Arizona job. And he's really emerged as one of the best forwards in the Pac-12.
Yeah, Joe, I like Arizona in this game too. They're one of the more athletic teams in this tournament. Caleb Love, after he played the national championship for UNC, transferring to Arizona, I think that storyline is going to happen. And Charles Barkley knows a lot about basketball, and that's the team that he has winning the national championship in Arizona. So I think this is one where it's been a great story for Clemson. I think they're going to play this game pretty tight, but I think the talent and the athleticism of Arizona is going to carry the day. And I like Caleb Love and the Wildcats to win this one.
And this is a big year for Arizona. We talked about a lot of those departed, longtime coaches. I mean, this team has not made it to a Final Four since Lute Olson was there. So they're trying to kind of get out of that shadow.
Which is interesting because I would consider, wouldn't you consider Arizona a blue blood in basketball? I would say they're, if they're not a blue blood, they're a borderline blue blood.
I think so. I would consider them number two after UCLA and the, of course, now extinct Pac-12 conference.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in the Pac-12, the ones that you had that were the basketball schools were UCLA, of course, being the greatest basketball program of all time. Arizona with, I think they won two national championships. With Lute Olson, they made a lot of Final Fours, and
They
they also
may
won it
he
once
won
with
one with Jason Terry and probably Mike Bibby.
Mike Bibby, yeah. But I know he was there a lot. But Arizona was a school that I always considered to be a blue blood. And then other than that, I think Utah would be kind of the closest thing they had because Rick Majerus had that national championship, and that was a pretty consistent program for a while.
Yeah, I mean, the Arizona and UCLA are the two that kind of carried the torch. But you had some other schools that probably kind of want to be, on that level as far as basketball, maybe, somewhat of a focus, like, Washington State, I think they're pretty into basketball and some of these other schools. But, you really see it with these two schools kind of carrying the torch.
Yeah. So it's weird seeing Arizona not having made a Final Four since Lute Olson. And I think you're right. There's a lot of motivation there. Joe, a team that has won a national championship weirdly before, but is always really overshadowed in their state based on what you see from everybody else, NC State. Of course, they had the great Jim Valvano and won that national championship where they came out of nowhere and beat Georgetown after winning the ACC tournament. They have, in what my mind is, the star of the tournament in DJ Burns. I mean, the guy kind of sells himself. He's like Shaq if Shaq was in less good shape. Shaq always like kind of fit his body. I mean, DJ Burns, he's just a big dude all around, but he's got quick feet. I mean, I've heard him be described as a bowler, a bowler's body, but with Baryshnikov's feet. And he's got kind of the old school like Wilt Chamberlain hook shot that he goes to. And he's also, for a big guy, a really great free throw shooter. And in my mind, I think he's become the star of this NCAA tournament so far.
Yeah, he's fun to watch, and that's kind of an interesting matchup. It's almost kind of eerily similar to Clemson against Arizona. You have another ACC team and NC State taking on Marquette, and Marquette's really good. I mean, Tyler Cullen has come back in the tournament. He's like a very fun, electrifying guard to watch. He's the type of guy that that can make no-look passes and things like that. Just really creative out there. And so I think this is a very intriguing game. I think I like Marquette to win. Kind of on the strength of the Big East. But I'm really fascinated by this one. I mean, and I'll say, speaking of guard play, Dan, another game I feel like maybe I'm not hyping it up enough, but I feel like Illinois Iowa State like has a chance to be fantastic as well.
Yeah, I mean, Illinois right now, Shannon is playing such excellent basketball. And of course, Iowa State's fresh off their destruction of Houston. I think that's going to be a good one. Before we talk about that one, Joe, I think that as much as I love NC State and what they've done, I think that they're about to be worn out. I mean, they've had won so many games over such a period of time. That Oakland game was incredible that they had. I mean, that went down into overtime right there. And I think that the Magic's out for them. And I think, Shaka Smart and Marquette, they're every bit of a team that can make the Final Four. And I think the combination of smartest coach and Kolick and being an excellent guard, I think I like Marquette to win that one.
I think so too. Like, I think, if Kolick had been healthy, this might be a team that would have been in the running for a number one seed. They still got, a very high seed. And I think that having his absence actually made the rest of the team better because they learned how to win without him.
Yeah, and you and I were talking about this a little bit before the show. Shaka Smart is such an interesting basketball coach to me because he had that meteoric rise, took VCU from the first four to the final four, and he gets the big job at Texas. He parlays that into getting, one of the biggest jobs in college sports anywhere. And I think it was too much for him because Texas is not just being a football coach. It's not just being a basketball coach. It's not just being a baseball coach. You have to be a politician too. You have to appeal to the big Texas boosters, the oil men. And I feel like Shaka Smart, being at VCU, didn't have any idea how to really do that. And I think him getting, going back to Marquette, which is a traditional basketball powerhouse, they've been to the Final Four. Of course, back when they had Dwayne Wade, they've had a good program, but they're a basketball school. It's a small Catholic school in Wisconsin that the only thing they put their money towards is basketball, and that's the only thing they care about. I think that that just fits Shaka Smart's personality so much better than just being in, one of the biggest universities in America and having to deal with all the things that comes with being a Texas coach in anything.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I've been to Marquette's campus one time. It's a really nice campus, but it also kind of has, like a small school feel to it, even though, it's a Big East university. Like you feel like there's kind of that peaceful, quaint atmosphere. It's really beautiful. And so, yeah, I think that this job definitely fits him more.
Yeah. Joe, going to that Iowa State and Illinois game, it's fascinating to me because I've been really down on Big Ten basketball for the most part this year, and everyone's been just so enamored with what the Big 12 has been, which it has. But Illinois may be, playing the best basketball of any team right now. I mean, they won the Big Ten tournament. They've got a legitimate star in Shannon. And then Marquez is the guy that's been putting up all those points lately, right? I mean, I think he's been over like 20 points the last three or four games. And Brad Underwood's been a very successful coach for Illinois, but the one thing he hasn't done yet is made a Final Four. And I think that there's a lot of motivation there with Illinois. And I like Illinois to win this game.
Well, I think so too. We talked about it, a week or so ago. Like I kind of penciled in Illinois as kind of like a team that I could see actually winning the national title this year. Like I think if anybody could beat UConn this year, it could be them. Having Shannon and also Domask, who had a triple double in their first
No
game.
mass,
I
that's for
mean,
sure.
that may be the best two guard tandem in America. I mean, those guys are fantastic. They're both seniors. They're both the kind of players, that we. We don't see guys staying like, for their senior year that often. And so I think that they could carry the day, but I was shocked to see that Illinois has not been to a Sweet 16, I don't think, since that 2005 team that played for the national title.
That is crazy. With all the great teams they've had at Illinois, who was the big guy they had that Brad Underwood had a couple years ago that was
He
just
had a
so
guy
dominant?
named Dosunmu or Dosunmu was like their player of the year.
Yeah,
They
and
were a one seed 3 years ago, I think.
right, that's the guy they had on their one seed teams. I remember that year, I think I picked Illinois to win the national championship because I was so enamored with that big they had.
Oh, yeah, I know you're talking about Cockburn, Kofi Cockburn.
Cockburn. Kofi Cockburn. That guy was amazing. And they didn't even make it past the second round with that guy. It's crazy to me.
Yeah, no, it's shocking. It definitely is. But I mean, this team though, you got to give Underwood credit for being able to get them like a team that's trending, like playing really hot, playing their best basketball in March. Whereas that other team maybe kind of curtailed a little bit, leveled out at the end of the season. This team's playing as good as anybody, and I think that what makes the difference in this game is that Iowa State's more of that defensive kind of grinded out team, more balanced scoring. And I just don't think they have any one scorer that can take over a game the way the two Illinois guards can.
Well, Joe, I mean, you and I've said it so many times that guards are what win national championships. It's been, a tried and true thing, especially lately with what college basketball has morphed into. We saw it a couple years ago where Gonzaga had the best guys inside of them, anybody in America. They took on Baylor and Butler and the other great guard that Baylor had at that point just destroyed them. And I think that's what you're going to see here. I mean, Iowa State's got a good defensive team, but they're not going to be able to score in the same league as Illinois. And I think Domas and Shannon right now, you're right, I think they're the best guard tandem in America. And that's something that means that Illinois has a chance to win a national championship. And I think they're gonna be on display and they're gonna make it to the Elite Eight.
And the other team that's hoping that guard plays the recipe for a national title is Houston.
Yeah, I mean, they still got a bunch of guys back from what we saw before with Shedd and company. And I think that them having that scare against A&M and gutting it out in such an amazing way with even having to have, input from a walk-on to make a free throw at a clutch time, I think that's going to help Houston out a whole lot. And that's going to be a great game between Houston and Duke. I really wish that you could have seen Coach K there one more time so we could have seen a Kelvin Sampson and Coach K matchup. But this is a really interesting game. I mean, these are, I think Houston's borderline a blue blood, even though they never won a national championship. And I think this is going to be interesting to see. I think Houston's a better team, but I think the uniform is going to be something that Houston's going to have to get over in this one.
Yeah, there's definitely that psychological factor. We've also had Houston, the last couple of years after making it to the Final Four in 2021, they've kind of underachieved in the NCAA tournament. But I've been really impressed with how they added LJ Cryer to this team. He basically replaced Marcus Sasser as kind of their go-to scorer. And you've got some of these other guards. And I really like what Sampson's done with this team. We talk about guard play. He's run just completely a guard-oriented offense, kind of gets up and down the court, but they're also the type of team, that can wear you out. They can press you on defense. They can make your life really tough. And so I find that their schematic very interesting. I think they win this matchup against Duke. I think that Houston, the way they're trending, the way they survived A&M, I still think I'm not picking them to win the national title, but I think they've got as good a chance as anybody to make it to the title game.
Well, I made a bold proclamation on the show a couple years ago that Houston would win a national championship within the next 5 years with Kelvin Sampson. And I think they still have a great chance to do it this year. And I like them in this game because of the hustle and the tough style of basketball that they play. I heard something the other day that I found so interesting that I'd never heard of, that Kelvin Sampson during practices does what he calls bucket drills. And what he'll do is he'll take like a Home Depot bucket lid and put it on top of the basket, and it's all about rebounding and getting on the ground to get the ball, and it's just completely live, and he has people shoot the ball. Of course, it hits the bucket, it won't go in, and then it's just about toughness and rebounding and, going after the ball. And I think that's something that they're going to have that Duke's not. Filipowski is an excellent player, the latest in the long line of Duke players that are kind of hateable, that have their things, that Filipowski had the fake injury against Wake Forest that made everybody mad. And I think Duke's been really excellent so far in the tournament, but give me the experience of Houston in this tournament, the longtime great coaching of Kelvin Sampson, and I think coaching and experience is what gets it done, and Houston makes it to the Elite Eight.
I think so. And, outside of Filipowski, it's hard to really even think of another Duke player that I can name off the top of my head. And maybe that's the theme of this Sweet 16. When you look at a team and you're trying to pick a winner, how many of these teams can you name off the top of your head instantly, like with Illinois, Shannon and Domas, or, whoever, like you can name two players, whereas a lot of these teams, it's hard to think of one. And sometimes I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I mean, there's only two teams so far that have players that have really been there, and it's Houston and it's North Carolina. And I think you're starting to trend a lot in that direction for the national championship.
That would be an interesting matchup. And then, of course, UConn, too.
Well, yeah, of course you got, yeah. But I'm talking about in terms of the players. Those are the only ones. And then, UConn's there in the realm of their own. But thinking about that, I definitely like the fact that North Carolina, Houston, both have great chances.
Yeah, I mean, we're setting up, for a very interesting Final Four. Not as many, with the exception of NC State and Clemson, not really any Cinderellas much this year.
That's right. And if you want to put on your glass slipper and listen to more episodes of us, you can follow us on Twitter at DJ Sports Show. And of course, subscribe to our YouTube network and listen to us on Spotify on the Dan and Joe Sports Show. And as always, I'm Dan.
And I'm Joe.